This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician.
Giddy hit Austin!
My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, coming to you from beautiful Trinidad World Recording, from beautiful Fort Worth, Texas, my studio here in Fort Worth. All my sympathies are with you, everyone. You've been out there sitting at your office or sitting in class, being inundated with bands worldwide who have found you on Facebook and MySpace and Twitter, begging and pleading with you to join them in their quest for world domination. And you think, who are these guys? I don't even listen to the radio anymore. I don't buy CDs. What good is music to me? Well, folks, this is the P2 Podcast, the place you come for some direction, some enlightenment in your chaotic music life in changing crazy times. We are the lighthouse in the fog, as we like to say. Well, it is a very special day today because we have two, man, industry legends here, from both hailing from Corpus Christi. We have over here Alan Huff, keyboardist, musician extraordinaire from Roger Craiger's very own band, who is in town tonight.
Huff Daddy.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Phil.
Man, he's jammed with us with the full band a couple times.
Yes, I have.
Jumped on stage. I shall be released.
Yes, I was cleansed.
Bathed in the waters. And also, some of you bands are out there going to be very happy to hear that I have found him, I have located him. The guy who's never called you back or emailed about that gig you've been trying to get at the Executive Surf Club in Corpus. But I've got him right here. Manny Morales is here.
Manny. What's up, what's up? The easiest way to get a hold of me nowadays is texting.
There you go, yeah. He'll get back to you. Man, Manny and I have known each other for a lot of years, running sound at the Surf Club. But, man, he's got all kinds of businesses. Now he's running, you're on the road running in front of the house for,
yep,
for the Roger Craiger operation.
My, fifth, maybe sixth year now.
I'm in my fifth. So
yeah,
you're right.
I'm in my five also.
Gosh, I remember Craiger's band when neither you guys were even around.
Yeah, me
that's
too.
That's how old
yeah,
I am.
Too. Well, I,
jeez.
That's how I met Craiger at the club.
So yeah, is that right? Yeah, he was a good guy to follow. So all three of you guys, you, Manny, Huff, and Craiger, born in Corpus Christi.
Same hospital, born
in the same hospital.
Spawn Hospital, CC, baby. CC.
Now, Alan Huff, keyboardist extraordinaire, grew up in Corpus. You say you were into the Beatles.
All my brother's albums, I'd sit and listen to them when they were like off at school or something.
Musical family, your brothers?
Well, my mom made everybody take lessons, but three of them really didn't pick up. They chose the guitar. And my other brother, Chris Huff, he, of all things, took accordion and piano lessons. And I took piano. And then later on, I started picking up his accordion, I guess, about 20 years ago. And so I'm kind of still messing with that quite a bit.
Now, your first big show, first big gig kind of in the music, but you know, playing in your high school, garage rocking bands,
chicks, as we all do.
Chicks, baby.
Chasing the girls. You figure out, hey, I get noticed when I'm playing an instrument.
Didn't blow my knee off.
Drinking a beer. That's right. Of course, we love talking about hearing great stories about the great Doug Supernaw.
Hey, one of the greatest guys ever.
And you were there during the heyday of Doug Supernaw.
Yes, sir.
Now, some of these fans listening to the podcast worldwide, bless you out there, P2 fans, might say, Doug Supernaw. Of course, I know that name. I know that name. Now, when did old Soup get big? That was what?
92, we started breaking. He had a song he didn't write. Old Red at the Jukebox, the Honky Tonkin' Fool. And in fact, we cut that up here in Dallas, not too far from Red's place.
Where'd
Red Stiegel's place. Little bar. Funny story, a little bit funny story.
Was it a live record?
It was. No. We cut the record in Nashville.
Okay.
Richard Landis was doing all that. He got with James Stroud. They started Loud Music.
Yeah.
But we cut the video, the first video we cut off our single, up here in right over by Red Stegall's place.
Bar. Yeah.
You know, smoke. They fill it with smoke. And when we're doing the dance scene, I'm standing behind a
Is it out on YouTube somewhere, the video?
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah.
What would that be
Honky
under?
Honky Tonkin' Fool, and then there's She's Never Looks Back and a few others. But I had this, like, you know, they brought these models. You know, Doug got to pick them on. So, you know, they're like, oh, if you get that one, I'm like, all right. Well, I go to stand by.
They said, like girls lined up out the bar.
Like, yeah, like, you get that one. I'm like, wow, this is really cool. So I'm standing by, and they're like, you're too short, so they go get a Coke case out of the back because I'm behind the bar. So
just to make it look a little taller.
Little known fact, yeah, I'm standing back there next to her on a Coke case.
Movie making magic with Doug Supernaw.
Yeah, man.
So Soup, now where was he from?
He's from the Houston area.
Houston area, yeah, okay.
Golfer, and anytime he got reached his plateau at something, he kind of moved on to something else. He was a professional golfer, you know, and once he got his card,
He was a pro golfer?
Yeah,
Doug Supernaw?
He had his pro card, never made the tour.
Yeah.
Now he's shooting for doing the... He turns 50. Sorry, Doug, if you're listening.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm telling honest. I turned 50 also in January. But anyway, he's going to shoot for the tour.
The senior tour.
That's
the
old
champions. The champions.
There
tour.
You go. That's
champions.
So.
Manny.
Yes, sir.
Morales.
Phil. Yeah, yeah.
Running sad. Did you start at the surf club under, what's his name? Thurman
Love. No, I didn't actually. I started just like everyone else in a garage band in high school.
So you were playing gigs there with
a
band?
I was trying to sing. No. By the time I made it to the surf club, I was working at another club downtown for a small production company.
Okay.
And then something happened with the in-house production company. They called the guy I was working for, and I went out there and mixed the Killer Bees.
Oh, first show with the surf club. They're Austin, right?
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Killer Bees, yeah.
Malcolm E. Johnson and...
Yeah.
Or
Dude had the big dreads
Malcolm,
and everything.
Yeah.
So you were working, running sound and things like that.
Yep. Working.
And just
job.
Built your way up, so you were just the house guy?
I was the house guy, and then the guy that had the production company, who was a great friend of mine, a good mentor, like a great uncle that I never had.
You know,
just an all-around great guy. He stopped doing it, and they asked me to put in a bid for the production contract altogether. So I went out and bought a couple of speakers, and on my own, believe it or not, and this is the God honest truth, you were my first gig.
Running sound?
Well, with my production company.
Ah.
At the surf club, yeah.
How do you remember that?
It was a big investment.
Do you have
for
that?
Me.
Do you
At the time, it was
do
a big investment.
Do you have the dollar frame somewhere in your house?
I just remember working there. I guess by then, it was already a couple of years.
Yep.
And I had upgraded the gear, so I was pretty excited, you know. And
the surf club was a great outpost, man, for us bands like ours. I mean, it was the edge of the world. You know, you play all these other towns, and it's a
destination.
It's a drag, but man, you get out in Corpus, you get the beach, you just it's just like you feel like you're somewhere else.
Yeah, you either have to take a right or a left, or you end up in the water. You know,
that's right, man.
That's what I always tell people: take 37. If you hit the water, you went too far.
If you don't turn your wheel to the right or left, you'll drive right into the bay. Is the great song.
Yeah. So, but yeah, that's I was working there already, and then they asked me to do the production. You know, they asked me if I wanted the contract, so I went and bought some more gear.
Did you already have a lot of experience running sound, or were you just kind of winging it?
No, I already had some experience. Well. By then, I started.
See, you must have outed yourself in your old band as a guy who can kind of mix the sound a little
bit. Well, you know, the singer, I was the singer in the band.
Right. That's rare for the singer to know how to run sound.
Yeah, I tried to sing, you know, so I bought the gear to do the gigs.
Right.
And then I got a call after the band broke up. Of course, it was a garage band.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't that good. I was probably the you know, the least skilled in the band.
And you were the singer?
And I was the singer,
yeah. What kind of stuff were y'all doing?
It was, man.
You can't, I'm not asking you to define yourself.
Yeah, it was.
You can't put it in a category.
It had to be rock. It had to be rock. It was post-punk, pre-grunge.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
He has a video, but he's been threatening to bring it on the bus. Yeah, but every time he acts like he forgets. I'm like, come on, Danny.
I did a couple of shows, you know, in San Antonio at the now closed down but famous Taco Land.
Yes, yeah. I remember Taco Land, yeah.
Taco Land, I did a
couple of... So you're just a punk guy, you're just skateboarding around Corpus Christi?
I basically grew up playing soccer and skating.
Yeah.
And then after the garage bands, I started running sound, and man, it just kind of all snowballed.
Who were some of those early influences that got you into music? You mentioned
that. My dad, for starters.
Oh, yeah?
He was in the conjunto, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, he was
what
also... He sang. He wasn't that good either.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Runs in the family.
But he had the sure vocal master.
I'm from a musical family. You're from a non-musical family.
Yeah.
But very technically savvy.
I remember being pretty young and having my hands on a sure vocal master.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
the
no horns at all, just like, a tin or whatever it was back then,
a
reverb switch.
Yeah, right.
But then,
popping on and off.
Yeah, but then after that, you know, going into junior high and high school, it was, just like rock and metal.
Yeah.
Van Halen 1, Ozzy, man. Black Sabbath, Judas Priest, and then Black Sex Flag Pistols, of course.
Oh, yeah.
After that.
Did you ever go down that road, Huff?
Oh, God, yes.
When did that happen? Of course, you get into the Beatles, it's innocent.
Oh, no, and then it was like, gosh, The Brains and Poly Rock out of New York.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I got to go see U2 on Valentine's Day in like 81.
No
I still
way.
Had the stub.
Where was
for
that?
$3. It was formerly Randy's Rodeo in San Antonio. And Cardi's had bought it.
Holy
And
cow.
I think like the Crayola's open. Do you remember some of those early
Yeah, he told me about this. Yeah, it's crazy. He said it has a stub.
Is that
a
right?
Stub, yeah. And then back then you
that
could,
was their
you
first
could drink
tour,
it.
Like in a station wagon, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, really.
And
I mean,
they were all, and they're not, they're my age. So, here's these 18, 19 year old guys from Ireland, here I am.
Joel Blue.
And they're back there reading their Bibles. And, the guy was so impressed that we were from Corpus Christi and called for tickets.
Yeah.
And so we got to kind of go look at it backstage. Yeah. We didn't get to meet him.
How'd you get turned on to U2? I mean, did you see the video or something? The Boy album.
You had
a great album.
I even have a t-shirt I bought that time. I should bring it for you. It would fit you. So anyway. It's really cool.
Vintage U2 tee. Boy, that went out of bed. That's cool. Man.
That became Randy's Ballroom, correct?
That was, was Randy's Rodeo. Ballroom? Vice versa. I don't know. I think it was Randy's and Cardi's and back.
That was the only date that the Sex Pistols played in Texas that I know of.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. 70 something or other. Of course, I didn't make it, but I know the guy that did production.
The Cars. I was telling about the Cars.
Yeah, right. One of your early bands, y'all played Beatles.
Did a lot of Cars.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, we did some of that Duran Duran, Hungry Like
the
Wolf.
Wow. So were you playing the Moog stuff?
Yeah.
So that's what got you into the Cars.
Greg Hawks was very simplistic, his little counter melody stuff.
Right.
And I'm like, hey, I can go buy me a little knockoff Moog Prodigy.
Yeah, yeah.
And, do all
that. Huff knows all the Squeeze songs.
It was, man. Tempted, baby, one of my favorites.
That's a great song,
man. Really cool. I saw them with a flock of seagulls when I was about, I guess, 20. We'd road trip to Austin, man. I think it was Zilker Park, or one of the little parks down there. And it was Squeeze and Flock of Seagulls, and I guess a local band opened.
God, you were just the '80s guy, awash. Yeah.
I saw Van Halen at Texas Jam in '78.
Oh wow!
And they were on at 4 o'clock.
Was that like the Texas Diver Jam Down?
They
era?
Were on at 4 o'clock, and then it was they had just like won something out. They're Running with the Devil.
Yeah.
I think it was 70.
Oh, that was like 70. That first record was
what? Yeah, that's Van Halen.
They went on at 4 o'clock, and then it was, I remember the bill, it was a Heart, Blue Oyster Cult in Boston.
Yeah.
And Tom Schultz was ripping it. It was pretty cool.
Was Boston good?
And I was like, yeah, it was awesome, man. Yeah. And here I'm like 18, driving my mom's
The great late, late great Brad Delp passed away.
Yeah.
When did he pass? That was just a couple years ago. Boston's old singer.
Benjamin Orr from The Cars also, pancreatic.
That's right.
He was 53. So I have a lot of useless information, so this is really
cool. It's kind of bringing us down at the end of our segment.
It makes for good road trips. You know?
That's right.
So it's like, hey, he's a third row entertainment.
Yeah,
I'm
plus
first
all
row.
My jokes are fresh again because,
start over at the top and tell Phil all the stories.
I always joke our guitar players are 1 year older than me combined.
You're right. Collectively. You're the vet. Fans, stay tuned. We're going to get into the second segment here. We'll talk more about what these Corpus Christi legends have been doing of late. also dig deep into their past here. Huff seems like he's seen a lot of shows. Talk about maybe his best show he's ever seen. You too, Manny.
I want to hear some
disaster shows from, like, maybe someone you tried to run sound for, someone that was great, you know. Talk about some experiences and maybe how it can affect you, the fan, out there the next time you're out there watching. Out watching Kreger or playing a show at the Surf Club or something. Give you some perspective out there.
I got a bag full.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, enlightening your musical life. Did you know you can download every Pritchett record at p2tunes.com? $4 a piece. We want you to have it all. Stock up on it or come record here at the studio or book Phil Pritchett and the full band, 817-733-5256. Whose number is that, you say? That's my number right here in my pocket. Don't be surprised when I answer. Don't hang up because you're scared and intimidated. Speak to me, folks. That's what I'm here for. It's what we do. Alan Huff is here, keyboardist from Roger Kreger's band, who is in town tonight for the big show at Billy Bob's.
Big show.
And
big
Manny
show.
Morales, who's running the big board out there in the room?
The big 4K at Billy Bob's.
Now, do you roll in your own rig there or you use their rig?
No. I just roll up at the front of the house rack, and all I'm doing is using one vocal preamp. That's about
good
it.
Good deal.
Yeah.
And I always think about Manny doing that because I have the luxury of bringing my own rig every
show.
Yeah,
that's right.
And it's kind of like some days I'm like, man, they give him like a coffee can and a, you know,
and a
little
string.
And he goes, make them sound good.
Oh, man. Well, who is in the band now? You got Josh Owen on guitar.
Josh Owen, right? Yeah, Rick Redfern is playing fiddle and guitar. And Stormy Cooper is on bass. And then Matt Medeiros, who's been with Roger like 11 years now.
Yeah.
On drums.
And Stormy, not
nine,
much
and a,
less than that.
Nine and a half.
Yeah, that's right.
So I think we all get CDs when we make our 10 years.
Yeah, that's right, man.
Roger gives us the fun all wrong CD.
It's a good camp to be with, that's for sure.
Totally.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah, we get along great. And
we did my band did so many shows with Kreger, you know, being with a lot of people. Probably the first time they ever saw my band was playing with Roger, opening those Green Hall shows or at Ziegenbach or something like that.
A lot of them opened from stories that Medeiros was telling me, you know.
Yeah.
Fowler,
tons.
Eli, Randy Rogers, Eli and all those.
Have all opened for Kreger at one time?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they've all opened for me too, man. Some of these young bands open for me. I just go, man, you're stepping into some golden slippers,
there
man.
You go.
Like, what do you mean? I'm like, man, you know, that's Ragweed used to open for us. And whoever, Randy Rogers, or a lot of stuff like that. Man, some of our best shows I opened for people early was at the Surf Club. We opened for Keen.
Yeah.
People don't even believe me. They're like, Keen played there? Well, I'm like, it wasn't that long ago, really? Was it? 2001?
Nowadays. It might have been 2001. I don't remember.
2002 or 3. But we opened for Robin Earl.
We sold out two shows a day, I think it was, one time on a Sunday. And then we did back-to-back shows also on Fridays and Saturdays.
For Robin Earl Keen?
Correctly, yes.
More memorable is we opened for the great Leon Russell one time.
Yes.
Were you at that show?
Yeah, I ran sound.
You ran sound?
Leon Russell didn't travel with the front of house guy.
Yeah, so. And he had I just remember we got on the stage. Of course, it was a smaller stage at the Surf Club. And so he left us about 7.5 inches at the front of the stage.
Yeah,
for
exactly.
us, you know?
Yeah.
So we had like a snare drum.
Yeah.
The toes of my boots were hanging off the front of the stage.
Yeah.
And I remember we were there for sound check, and Leon had that big, you know, he's got the, you know, his
the grand
keyboard, and then he's got the laptop with the lyrics on it.
Yeah.
And then on either side, dude, he's just got two wedges with like 15s and a horn or two.
Two 15s with a 2-inch, both Macaulay.
Like shooting up at his head. And it might have been you. Someone was sitting there like, and they started to play a chord, and they looked over at us. We were just standing there by the speakers, and the guy's just like, hold your ears. I'm like, what? He goes, hold your ears. I'm like, why? What for? And this guy just hit the Oh, my eyes just rolled in the back of my head. I mean, it was the loudest sound. They go, he's deaf as a post, man. He can't hear anything.
Yeah, man. That was definitely a loud show. And if I remember correctly, you guys rocked. You guys always rocked.
Yeah,
you
know, always. Thanks, man.
You guys just always bring it, you know?
We always bring it.
Yeah, so.
Sometimes it's weird. I go back. There's a board or maybe it's not there anymore. With a lot of the bands, and it was like from 95 or something.
Uh-huh.
And some of the bands were written on there, you know. Yeah, we're right there with like Leon Russell and whoever, you know.
Funny story
Pat
about
Green
that.
And,
funny story about that board. It was a wall at one time to separate.
This is backstage,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, what was the backstage
piece of
from kind of like the where the monitor world is.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so I had a construction company before, and I did a lot of the remodeling there at the surf club.
Right.
And they were going to tear that out, and instead of tearing it out, I convinced them to turn it into a gate. And I cut the gate out of the wall, leaving all the signatures from 99 to about 2005.
I didn't realize that was a nostalgic,
intact,
historical.
Yeah, intact, and it's
decision.
Still there. It's still there to date. And it's
somebody's
still,
gonna steal that
well,
thing,
it's,
man.
It's still swinging, man. It was really sad when they changed the door to the office too, because it had a bunch of stickers. Like the surf club just turned 20. This March.
Yeah.
So, you know, 20
had
years
a big
ago.
Month.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It was cool. We had a 20th anniversary party with Dick Dale, you know, surf guitar legend.
Yeah.
It was great. And actually, I booked the first band to ever play at the surf club to do the opening slot for Dick Dale.
Who was that?
Aloha Dave and the Tourists.
A local band?
Yeah, local band.
Local
yeah.
band.
And they're still
oh,
doing it out
cool.
there. Yeah, man. You know, they're like, they're full on professionals now, you know, but it's.
In all your years there, is there one show, one night, one incident you just go, man, probably above all else, you know, if I had to, I don't know if I could make it number one, but it'd be in the top five. What would that be?
As in a live, a good experience or bad experience?
Either one.
Man, that's
something that anything jump out at you? Just a legendary, big name, or just a?
Yeah. Well, there's I take a lot of pride in the surf club for starters,
mm-hmm.
and the shows that really make me proud are like the guys that started there that have gone on to like bigger and
sure.
you know bigger and not better but just bigger
sure.
bigger venues and
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
have gained some Y'all success.
Are instrumental in
yeah,
getting them going.
Yeah, gained some success,
sure.
you know. So that always makes me feel good. And then when I took this job with Roger, it's like I saw those guys and it's full circle, you
right,
know. And it's
right.
like, wow, man, these guys are like really doing
out
it.
Here
you know,
playing.
Yeah, they're
yeah.
really doing it. I never knew how hard it was to be on the road.
Yeah.
But so I mean, as far as like. Really memorable shows. I mean,
you ever sit back there like, I don't really know this band. I mean, they came out and just like blew you away and you're a fan ever since.
Any in different like genres, BR549 was one of the first guys,
yeah,
the first
oh, yeah.
bands that like,
traditional
those guys in the
Nashville.
Derailers just floored me back in the
yeah.
day. And I was just sitting there going, because I wasn't real familiar with country music
right.
or Texas country music.
Yeah.
And, you know,
those
Robert Earl always just came out and just like, just ripped.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
but he's been a pro outfit for a while now. Mm-hmm. And they just, when he did those gigs there, it was just like sitting back and just like, you know, watching them, like a professional a team, you know, like a
sure.
sports team. You know, it was just a well-oiled machine. They just went in there and just like rocked. And it was crazy.
They could do no
but
other.
But like, you know, and then, like I said, BR549, when those guys just went in there, it was like the same. The same caliber of musicianship.
Right.
But they were just. When
fun,
they came out there, just
energy.
They just,
yeah,
they, yeah, the energy, and I don't even know how to explain it. I just sat there and like I was floored, and the Derailers did it for me also, you yeah. know. And then, you know, we've done all different genres. I mean, we did the Dead Kennedys there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, without Jello singing, of course, you know. And then,
you gotta say Blue October because you know they're one of my favorite
you know what?
Bands.
Yeah, let me back. There's been a lot of shows.
A lot. Oh, there's so many. I was like, yeah. How do you pick one?
The Surf Club is 20 years old, and I have been there. I think because we've lost track. I think I started there 2 years after it opened up. I think.
Yeah.
And,
we did a show there with Doug.
Yeah,
he did.
Yeah, Doug. Yeah, I actually did. I do. No, you guys had a sound guy. Did I do sound? No, you guys
we
brought
had a sound
guy.
Man, but
yeah.
you were there.
Yeah, yeah I was
first
there.
Met
I did probably did monitors for them. But yeah, Blue October, good one, Huff. A great one actually.
Jim.
Yeah, Jim Elliott, man. He's a front of house for Corey Moore now. Mm-hmm. It just he's my idol.
Right.
You know, and he's just it's crazy, and the band was great, and I mean that's a perfect. Thanks, Huff.
No problem.
They started, you know, in the Houston area,
right.
and, you know, they played clubs in Corpus, and now they're
right.
like, you know, they're huge.
Yeah,
you hear
right.
on the radio
yeah,
worldwide, you know, so it's...
What about you? What about you, Mr. Huff?
Like, one of my most memorable gigs by far.
Well, that you played or saw,
that
you
played,
saw you too.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, what about playing, you know?
That would be...
What were some of those Supernaw gigs?
96 Farm Aid.
Oh, yeah,
I got to actually... First off, when I went to go catering... I was just like, wow, there's Jewel over there, you know? And I'm like, and there's Steve Earle over
now, where
here.
Was this?
Rob
was this, in,
this was in South Carolina.
South Carolina, okay.
Yeah, 96.
Virginia, somewhere out there.
And Doug had done the compilation thing with the Beach Boys. You know, Nashville was doing all that, picking on this.
In retrospect, was this maybe the apex of the Supernova train ride?
This was like seeing the top of the hill big time.
Okay,
and,
okay.
You know, we got to hang there and taste a little bit of it.
Farm Aid.
But I actually played with the Beach Boys.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, I asked Carl Wilson and Mike Love and all of them. Wow. It was amazing, man.
You asked if he could sit in, or were they?
The song that Doug had covered, the Beach Boys, like Nashville did a Beach Boys album.
Okay.
And so he had done Long Tall Texan. Mm-hmm. And they said, "Do you want to come up and play on it?" I'm like, "Heck yeah." And then what's funny, at the end of the show, I'm like standing, Neil Young's right next to me, and I'm just like in awe. And I was
talking to
Sonefield from Hootie and the Blowfish, and they were all just real cool, man.
Yeah.
And I had met Bobby Nelson, Sister Bobby, before, because, right, you know, we'd been to Pertinalis and Willie's place, and Cootie, bless his heart, rest in peace. And anyway, at the end of the show, I'm looking up, there's Neil Young, and everybody goes out to do Will the Circle Be Unbroken. That's usually what Willie closes
the
shows.
At the end of it, right.
And closes shows with. So he invites everybody that it's saying to come back up.
Yeah.
And Bobby dragged me up there. And so if you ever get to see the video, you'll see Alan Hubb out there like, I'm standing next to Neil Young, Will the Circle? And I'm just like totally floating, man. It was
That's great.
It was so cool, yeah.
That is really,
and then we
really
did
cool.
The Astrodome. It was a triple play. Triple threat, Texas triple threat. I think it was Tracy Byrd, Mark Chestnut, and us.
Like for the rodeo?
Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo, and it was the first pay-per-view they ever did. And they did it in like a six-state, New Mexico, Oklahoma
area.
You know, that six-state region, and it was a big success. So they still do that every once in a while.
I think, what are you calling up? The Big Show, right? You made it to the Big Show.
I made it to the Big Show.
Yeah, the Big Show. There's no chairs at the top of the mountain, though. You stand there, look around, and after a while, it's like, all right.
I'm like,
get moving. There's a whole lot of guys trying to get here.
I can't just stay here forever.
There's not a lot of room up here, man. I'm like Crash on Bull Durham, you know. Yeah. Don't ever stand here when I give you a present, you know. You take it.
That's right. Well, now, I'd be a little remiss if I didn't acknowledge, at least, and I don't want to assert, everybody loves Supernaw. There's a lot of Supernaw folklore out there. I don't know if it's been around in recent years or just with other songwriters. People have encounters with him. They run into him. He's an eccentric guy.
Yeah, he is now. He's
out about town.
He's been
town.
Diagnosed with bipolar. And
well, that's what I heard.
And, you know, that's sometimes not fair. If a quarter of the stories were true, I would not be sitting here with you right now.
Right, I
love the reputation we had. I mean, we get places, and like when we went on tour one time with Mark Chestnut.
Yeah. Is it true you drove an RV into the lake or something? Like, what? You know, just.
No.
You hear all kinds of.
Yeah. And Joe Ladd was our manager. Joe Ladd was both of our managers, and we end up at the hotel. And,
right.
And so this band, we go up and take the stage, and it's like Mark Chestnut on drums. I'm playing guitar, and I don't even play guitar, you know, and I know my few chords, and they're doing Purple Rain. I wish we could have a rendition of that.
Right.
A video of that. But then other great gigs, man, is a. With Roger, you know, I've got to travel a lot around, and, you know, we did Europe.
That's
2 years ago, and that was
great.
I got tired of looking at old stuff.
Yeah. That's right.
It was really neat.
It was very exciting. Very exciting, man. What's been going on lately with the Kreger bandwagon?
He's been cutting recording, some songs, recording.
Writing.
You know, we got to play, if you listen to the Here It Is record, he cut half of that with Rodney Foster up in Nashville. Mm-hmm. And you know how producers are. They like to work with their crew. They feel like he didn't have a lot of time frame. It wasn't going to be one of those let's take a lot of time and go hang out and rent a house type deals.
Right, just go out in the woods.
He did that, but Roger really wanted to use us. And so Lloyd Maines cut, I guess, about half of the
five. Yeah.
So and it meshes pretty well together.
Sure.
Because, you know, it's not like Nashville, Texas.
Yeah,
it intertwines and we got to play on about five of those songs.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and Roger is really good. We were with the world-famous Lloyd Maines, who got to play with the Clash, by the way, when you played that Clash record.
Is that right? Well, is that back in the Joe Ely days?
Yeah, and then they toured with him, and they, like, they said, you know, come on up and play. And
I thought about that. I think I'm working with him in June. Hopefully, if I can get the time off, he's going to be down at the club doing a show with Terry Hendrix. So
yeah, that was great, man.
Who are we gonna tackle in the vault? We got Manny Black Flag guy over here, man.
Yeah, Sex Pistols.
Talking about the dead Kennedys.
Yeah.
We got Alan Huff, Supernaw, the Beatles, the Cars. Man, we'll see what we can pull, what we come up with in the vault. A record that may unite all three of us sitting here that we can discuss the merits of when we get into the vault section in the final section here on the P2 Podcast. Stay tuned.
If I could, yes I would. If I could, I would let it go. Surrender this looking.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, enlightening your chaotic musical life. Thanks for joining us here, as we know you do. Every week, we hope we're shedding a little light on these crazy music business times of ours. To help us do that today, we have Manny Morales of Executive Surf Club Sound and Booking fame, now running front of house sound for Roger Kreger on the road, and also from Roger Kreger's band, and a legend from the band of Doug Supernaw, the great Alan Huff is here. Thank
Huff
you, gentlemen,
Daddy,
for being
Huff
in.
Daddy.
Supernaw and the Possum-Eating Cowboys.
Well, Huff was telling us earlier about seeing you two. What year was that?
81.
81. Manny was talking about the Unforgettable Fire. His eyes just sort of settled on the Unforgettable Fire over there on the vinyl rack.
Yeah.
Of course, fans on the podcast know that as a producer and a guy who applies some sort of some of his own, whatever you want to call it, spices and things to recordings. I'm a big fan of Daniel Lanois, who produced that record along with I think that was with Brian Eno also.
Yeah.
What do you got there, Manny? What do you got there for us? What year is that?
I have 84, you two, The Unforgettable 85? Fire, and it is 1984 on Island Records.
I love how, now there's a lot of great documentary stuff on that record online, YouTube. You can look up Unforgettable Fire, and you know they're recording the castle and all that. I think a lot of the tracks they actually did in the studio back, but at least some of the basic tracks and some of the early stuff, they were in the castle, you know, that's on the cover there. I think that's Slane Castle. Isn't that where that is?
I'm not sure.
They did that concert there recently.
Huff?
Yeah, I remember when they cut that.
Here's a question I've got, Huff.
Yes, sir.
As someone who saw you two way back in the day, because, you know, we all struggle with this as artists. You just think, man, either have it or you don't, or it's all about hard work, or you don't know why some band makes it and some band doesn't, but... what were your impressions of you two?
Passion.
I mean, yeah.
Passion. I mean, you know, like I was telling you, though, they prayed in the back. They were a band. They were already a band. And as you know, it's the same four guys.
Yeah.
You know, Adam Clayton, The Edge, Bono, and...
Rodney Mullen.
There you go, Mullins, yeah.
Larry Mullen.
Larry Mullen.
Okay. Larry Mullen Jr.
Rodney Mullen's a skater, by the way.
Comedian.
Skater. future primitive.
Sean Mullins, okay.
Kyle Peralta, pick that up, too.
We got Manny's influences shining through.
Yeah,
favorite
exactly.
Skateboarders.
Skateboarding.
Skater.
Well, you know, the first time I ever saw this is kind of a, certainly not a comparison, but I remember in Texas music, everybody's by themselves. You know, it's Pat, it's Roger, it's Phil, whatever. But I remember it was very unique, man. The first time I met the Ragweed guys,
yeah,
because they had the, you know, when they kind of had that brotherhood thing. Hey, they had their own inside jokes, and you know, even before you saw them play, you couldn't help but like want to be part of the gang, you know.
Right.
So you two kind of had that deal.
They totally.
It was
had
us
that.
Against
was,
the world. It was them against the world, you know.
It was a band without Yoko days or anything.
That's right. Yeah.
So
that's the passion. I mean, just
the passion. They came out there, you know. Of course, back then production was real minimal.
Right.
But you know, like when they did "I Will Follow" and stuff, they had the lights going and the drums. And, you know,
yeah.
And back then
there a lot of people there? Was it
kind
of a small gig?
I guess that's about 1,000 seater. And it was respectable, 800 whatever.
Sure.
And you know, still $3. I think minimum wage was, you know, $2.35. So you still had to work an hour to see a show.
Yeah. You know? And gas.
Going from Corpus Christi.
Wow.
But Yeah, they just came up there and they just ripped it. You know, they had that edge. Just, you know, some people kind of made fun of him as a guitar player, but man, he kept everything. The simplicity is what I really liked. You know, and Bono was just. In fact, I think on the Boy record, if you look, his last name. Do you know Bono's last name as Bono? I
mean, Paul Hewson? Bono Vox.
Very good.
Vox.
Vox. Right. I think that was just on the first or maybe first two records. I don't know.
That's right. Sure. I think he dropped the Vox after a while.
He's like, hey, I'm going to go like share the heck with it. I'll drop the last name.
Man, I had a. I saw that just the other thing that Bono recently. He was kind of in some financial trouble. That's kind of surprising.
Wow.
Not him personally, maybe, but his investment group, Elevation Partners. They invested in, I don't know, all kinds of stuff.
Sunglasses.
Was something.
Sunglasses. Yeah. Transition lenses.
Yeah. Combat boots. And,
yeah.
No. Bandana. So who knows? Who knows what Bono's up to, man? It's a tough thing to see those guys. To stay relevant like they have, you know.
Yeah.
Well, and so I guess some would argue maybe they're not relevant today. I don't know. They still put on a great show.
I think they always will be, you know. I mean, there's going to be somebody that a lot of the pop rock bands, you know, that you can hear the U2 influence, I think.
Sure.
You know, I think without U2 there wouldn't be Muse, who I just saw the other day, who, you know, rocked. And this record, I mean, Unforgettable Fire, when I first heard this, I was really into, you know, punk rock and metal and whatnot.
Right.
But when I heard like this record and before, you know, the records before this, like the what the Edge was doing like with the guitars, you know, and it sounded like a big band and there was only four guys, and you know, the drums always looked stripped down. There wasn't like a, you know, a Neil mm-hmm. Peart 87 piece drum kit, you know.
Yeah. They kind of came along at the right time for that. You
yeah,
know,
yeah.
Because I was into you know, just your garden variety. Van, you know, heavy metal and stuff, and that was the first kind of like Sunday Bloody Sunday, that Red Rocks, you know, was, man, there was something going on there when you watched
that performance.
Yeah, and I
would follow, you know,
songs
like
just kind of go, man.
Wow, listen to that. That doesn't sound like a regular power chord.
Yeah.
You know, black
power
chord. And
was that kind of the new wave? Was that kind of in the new wave?
Yeah.
They weren't really punk. They were a little more
melodic.
Yeah,
the bass line sounded like, you know, they were just kind of,
new wave,
it wasn't really anything real fancy. But
and I can still listen to that stuff. And I mean, what's like Sunday Bloody Sunday or New Year's Day, whatever.
Pride. Oh, jeez. I mean, no.
Great stuff, man.
It made me really start thinking about what went into, like, sound. You know, like mixing. It's like, hey, man, you know, like.
Did you ever mess around? Did you ever do studio stuff?
Yeah, I did.
Were you always kind of live, you know?
I did,
live sound.
A little project studio for. I did about a year of that, and that's about all I could take.
You don't like the studio?
I couldn't sit there listening to the same song, you know, like 46 times, you know?
It is.
It was just. And it was when the digital. Arrow was coming in, and I wasn't digging it at all.
Right.
You know? And I've just always been a live guy. And what's weird about it is, like, I don't go to a lot of live shows.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I
you watch one every night.
Yeah, exactly. When I get the chance, you know. And you ask
like
me, about,
I don't go watch other bands play. I listen, like, standing like backstage watching somebody.
I saw Jane's Addiction when they were the original band, and that was one of the greatest shows I ever saw. But I mean, getting back to what we were talking about earlier, but it's just weird, you know. And but when I heard this, you know, stuff like this, especially like this record in particular, it's like it really made me start thinking about mixing.
Right.
And not from the recording part of it. I like, wow, it'd be kind of tough to take this semi really busy music, but still just kind of in the pocket and make it, you know, translate it live. You know, have it come across like that live. You know.
How about you?
I still
you kind
go
of
to
a,
live
you
shows.
Kind of a, you kind of a studio rat or not really? How are you in the studio?
Oh, I mean, I get to go in and leave, so I don't have to listen to it over and over.
I mean, are you a guy that does seven, you know, 1,000 takes the same part? You kind of like, hey man, I'll play through it 3 times, take what you want.
I don't like to do that as much because I don't trust some of you guys every once in a while. Now I'm categorizing you because I've done songs before. They say, well, put strings on here and put piano and put organ and I'll put it where it needs it. And then I listen to it and like all 3 parts are going or something.
Right,
so
right.
I've learned one thing. If you don't want it heard, don't lay it down.
Don't play it, right?
Yeah. But, you know, I get to walk away.
Lazy guys, I usually leave the faders up.
You know, I did Kyle Bennett Band from around here, Eli Young Band. I did one of their live records. And so that's kind of my – these guys all talk about their side jobs. And one day I was thinking – I need a side job. They're all working. I said, well, I do have a side job. I go cut records. So, yeah,
that's right.
It's a lot of fun.
That is very good. Was your main instrument, what do you play mostly? You usually play organ?
Piano.
With Kreger?
I've really incorporated more, I guess if you listen to early sounds, everyone since I got the Leslie, you know. He was kind of a little bit, I don't know, man, because we were about keeping our stage sound down. But now if it goes out, Roger's like, get it fixed.
We need to get it fixed.
Yeah.
How long is it going to be before you get the Leslie back?
He kind of had to sneak it in on him. Right. And he loves it. And yes, I get to play probably equal piano, organ, and I really have a blast playing the accordion for him.
Right.
That South Texas stuff, you know, sure. Czech influences.
CC, baby.
That. Yeah, CC, right.
I feel like on a lot of these guys' records, demos and things guys send me, or hearing some new Texas music band, man, there is a lot of, you know, Hammond organ.
It's really come back.
It's really come back. Yeah, I mean, you used to just not hear it that much. I mean, but you're... I mean, a lot of... Do you feel like that? You feel like it's used more?
Certainly, yes. And, I mean, I remember hearing some of the organ stuff, and it's real subtle, but like Dark Side of the Moon?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
It's that slow Leslie.
Just the drones.
Yeah, and you know, it doesn't have to be in your face.
No.
You know, a lot of times I'll just use like the 32-foot bar and just put something real subtle.
Yeah.
Then sometimes I'll do some counter melodies, kind of what it calls for.
You know what's really striking about Dark Side of the Moon? So I someone mentioned, was talking about it. Everyone goes, man, that record is just has this, it's so huge. It just wraps around you. It's gigantic, and it just is. And but if you really listen to so much of it, there's just a single organ pad kind of playing, and the guitar is just just a bass. I go, man, there's like one bass note kind of ringing, and just an organ. That's it. Like to achieve this big sound, we just guys just layer guitars,
strip it down,
and then gigging.
And it just gets compressed, and it's just this. This brick of sound, you're just like, it doesn't sound more exciting or something.
Yeah.
Gig in the sky when that girl comes in.
Yeah.
Raised me. I got goose pimples, man. It was just like, wow, how cool.
Yeah, since,
got to see them also at the dome, man.
Lord,
the flying.
You've seen them all. The
I'm a fan, man. I mean, you know, I'm going to go see Porcupine Tree this month in Houston. You know, I mean... Mm-hmm. I mean, from Hanson, I'm like a Hanson.
I always appreciate
fan.
Every time we played with you. Every time we played with Kregger, you know, the rest of the band be back getting ready or something, man. But Huff, I always saw you in the wings, kind of watching it. They go, man, Huff's just digging the show, man.
Yeah.
I go, yeah, he always watches the opening band, you know.
I don't watch them all, so don't make him feel bad if I'm not there when they're playing. Sometimes I'm tired.
Since Huff brought the Leslie, or you know, since Roger let the Leslie on the road,
right?
I tell Huff all the time, it's like, man, I don't hear music the same anymore.
When we're sitting there
driving around, or even like in the live show, and I tell him, I hear that Leslie, man, I'm missing it. You know, it goes right here, you know, and it's like, we need it right there. And it's definitely changed the way I listen to music.
It's really cool, yeah.
What is sort of the, you know, I do a lot of fake organ stuff in the studio here. You just padding some things up on all kinds of tracks, my own. And yeah, it's always... When you go to the fast Leslie twirls, you know the speaker speeds. I mean, is that just all feel?
It's pretty much feel.
Is there no sort of book that was ever written? Kind of like, here's where you maybe should use it, or
you definitely don't want it always off or always on. It's just really it really is a feel thing.
It is.
You just
the down verse, the you kind of back it off.
Yeah, you know, and using, you know, if you don't have everything going, your volume pedal. You know, I mean, sometimes it looks like I'm driving a car back there, you know, and it's so much fun. But a
floor shifter?
It's just a feel thing. Everything. I learn music by ear.
Right.
And it's all by feel.
Oh, you never had formal lessons?
I took
a little bit.
But I wanted to play football. So my mom, like I said, made us all take lessons. Mm-hmm. Well, a few years later, I'm thinking, you know, hey, this is cool. I had a little garage band, and we did a little party, and like the girls were digging it, and I'm like... You know, I think I'm going to pay a little more attention
here, man.
That'd
be awesome here.
And then my brother found out I took his organ out of the house and wanted to beat me up. Yeah. That's a true story.
Oh, man. Have you ever had a Hammond organ?
He had a C2 and a Leslie, a 960.
Whatever happened to that rig?
Believe it or not, I sold it to Rick Reed in Austin, and he took the reverb box out of it, and he does industrial music, and so I don't even know where the skeleton of it is.
Yeah, wow.
It's crazy.
It's a coffee table, end table somewhere.
That one I'm talking about actually was not the C2, it was an Ace Tone he had that was a double bar.
You know, of course, those big old Hammond rigs are expensive, those old Hammond organs. I'll pose this question to you because I was posed it the other day.
Okay.
We'll have a good parting debate here.
All right.
You see my Telecaster up there on the wall?
Yes, I do. I recognize it.
It's got a 1951 neck on it.
Yeah.
It's kind of whacked out now. But, you know, that would have a market somewhere. I feel like in the last few years, since eBay, mm-hmm. we're talking about pawn shops and stuff driving mm-hmm. over here.
Yeah.
the price of everything just went through the roof.
Yeah.
A worldwide market. You got a 79 Strat. Ah, it's 70s? Man, that's, you know, $5,000.
Yeah.
Some old organ. Oh, man, that's this if it's a B3 or, you know, $10,000 for the whole thing. And we all love it. We all know it's worth it.
Yeah.
I wonder, however, if, and there's no way to know, but I wonder if those prices in the next year, everyone says, man, it'll always go up. I wonder if there's a chance they might go down as, I don't know, guys just get more used to just, you know, you just have your laptop, you're like, man, who's going to really go spend $10,000 on a B3? I mean, you know, once Elton John and Billy Joel and once they're all gone, are people really, now there's always going to be a market for a 57 Strat.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, like a 78 Telecaster, you think it's worth $3,000? Just yeah, really.
Yeah.
I don't know. I that was a good question. I go, man, you wonder if that vintage gear is going to always be that pricey,
hold its value,
or if it's if it'll ebb and flow a bit. I don't know. You have an opinion on that? You ever see anything recently? Or
it's all in the buyer, man. I mean, if somebody wants it bad enough and they know it's what you have, they're going to be willing to spend it. And sure, you're really on it when you say to us, it's worth every penny.
I just wonder if some of these young guys are that into it, if they'll just pay $3,000 for a Gretsch.
With the whole digital era, I think it's inevitable that some of it's going to get weeded out. You know, it's just, I think it's more nostalgia than anything else. You know, like they're like, wow, man, that is like the 50s. And it's like exactly like the one that like Chuck Berry played or Buddy Holly or maybe even older than that. You know,
and computers now are emulating the sound so well. That's taking a lot of it out. But, you know, they're also making a lot of the musicians that are coming up now very lazy.
Right, right.
Because I didn't play at time. I'll just move it.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't hit that ending.
That's another thing I didn't think about the Project Studio.
We were cutting on 2-inch tape. I mean, y'all missed the ending. Let's cut it again.
Yeah, start up.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah,
so that made you really on your toes. Because, you know, like if I messed up something in the middle, I go back and, oh, we got to wait. Huff's got to overdub this one. You messed that one up, you know, but you can go back and fix.
Right.
But endings and all, you had to be dead on.
The arrangement, you know, especially the drums. And the performance had to be there.
Yeah, you couldn't record the one piece and make the kick drum just, you know, cut and paste it all the way down.
Right.
You know,
right.
So it's like, okay, we got one good strike there. Let's cut and paste and just whatever the term is now, you know, just keep putting it all the way down the song, you know.
Yeah. Well, folks, Phil Pritchard here for the P2 Podcast. Wrapping up this edition, we just went from the unforgettable fire to recording.
Yeah.
Somehow. I really want to thank Manny Morales for being here.
It's a pleasure and an honor, Phil.
From the Roger Krager Organization, front of house guy, executive surf club booking guy. Call me bands. In fact, no. Don't email me. Hey, man, I heard you with Manny. Can you email him for me? And see if we can open that gig for Bob Schneider next month. I can't help you there. I would never violate our friendship for that.
I appreciate that.
And the great Alan Huff has been here, talking keyboards, U2, Supernaw, all the stuff he's done in the industry.
Thank you very much, and this has been a pleasure.
Man, well, hope you guys wish you well tonight over there at Billy Bob's.
And I wish we were doing one of your records. Where do you go when you sleep at night? Why don't we do that, man?
Well, man, maybe if y'all can stick around, we'll maybe do the High Tide in the Heartland in the vault.
There you go, next time. And if anybody gets a chance, this studio is rather impressive.
Thank you. Yeah.
I thought I was going to the other place in the Stockyards.
Yeah,
and then,
over the bar.
And I'd never been there before either, so when we walked in here, trust me, if you guys get a chance, you guys need to check this out.
Yeah, man. Amen. Come record. Email
it's legit.
Me. It is Phil@PhilPritchard.com. Thanks a lot, guys. That is our show for this week. Join us next week for more enlightenment, as the lighthouse in the fog is always there for you, the P2 listener, the music fan, guiding you in your chaotic musical life. Go to iTunes or to PhilPritchard.com to get all the Pritchard music you need. Oh, and if you want to throw in a single from Roger Krager or something, pick one up too. Pick one up too. There's room in the cart. There's room in the digital cart for a Krager tune here and there. Well, y'all have a great week, and we will see all you fans next week on the podcast. Take care.